So to prepare for our further study of Bhagavad Gita, I want to devote some time to studying some quotations from Srila Prabhupada about why we should study Bhagavad Gita. Of course, we may say, well, of course, we know we should study Bhagavad Gita. We've probably heard that. Is this Bhakta Chris? Okay. Here, take one of these. So we might say, well, we've heard this, you know, for a long time. We all understand that. But, you know, perhaps, as with so many other things in Krishna consciousness, there are, you know, different levels to our understanding of that. I think if we go through these quotations, we can see that there are, you know, many reasons, many very deep reasons why we should study very thoroughly Bhagavad Gita. So, maybe somebody could volunteer to keep a list of all the reasons, or you could each do that. Say as we go through these quotations, I think we'll find that there are different reasons why it's helpful to study Bhagavad Gita. So perhaps we can keep a list of them. And you should make sure you save this set of quotations, because you'll need it for your midterm exam. You know, make sure you keep it and bring it to class, particularly on the day of your midterm exam. This first quotation, I've numbered them all, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, so number one, Srila Prabhupada says, to study Bhagavad Gita is to understand Krishna factually. So Vedavyasa is here. You can also have one of these. We're going to go over some reasons to study Bhagavad Gita given by Srila Prabhupada. So this is one reason to understand Krishna factually. So as devotees, we should want to understand Krishna. So as Srila Prabhupada is saying here, if we study Bhagavad Gita, then we will understand Krishna, not just theoretically, but factually. Then if we go to the second quotation, which is from Srimad Bhagavatam 4.16.3, the purport. Srila Prabhupada says, Lord Chaitanya has advised all his followers to go everywhere and preach the message of Lord Krishna. Since this message is essentially Bhagavad Gita, the preacher's duty is to study Bhagavad Gita as it is, understood by disciplic succession, and explained by great sages and devotees. So this is another reason to understand Bhagavad Gita, because Lord Chaitanya has said that the devotees of the Lord should preach Krishna's message everywhere, and this message is basically Bhagavad Gita. So this is another reason for us to understand Bhagavad Gita very thoroughly, because we're all supposed to be preachers of Krishna's message, and Krishna's message is essentially Bhagavad Gita. Now this next quotation is interesting. It's from a Bhagavad Gita lecture that Srila Prabhupada gave in New York, August 24, 1966. It says, Now, so far this Bhagavad Gita is concerned, you'll find the entire knowledge in it. if you study Bhagavad Gita. Of course, so far, entire knowledge, entire strength. When Krishna was present, he showed it. So that is stated in the history, in the Mahabharata, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and many other Vedic literatures, they are stated. So suppose you do not believe, and instead you think, oh, they have been written so many things for Krishna just to make him very great. You may not believe that, but at least you have got in your presence one thing, this Bhagavad Gita. This is spoken by Krishna, and you'll find here entire knowledge, entire knowledge. Any knowledge of the world and knowledge, even material, spiritual, social, political, scientific, philosophical, any knowledge you'll find entirely in this Bhagavad Gita. So at least this is proof that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because there is no other parallel book like this Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita is accepted and adored by all classes of men and all over the world. So this is a very interesting section here, because if you follow it, you'll see that Srila Prabhupada is saying, well, Krishna is Bhagavan. He possesses all opulences, all strength, all wealth, all fame, all knowledge, etc., etc. And he says, you'll find these descriptions in the Vedic literature. But he says, you may think, well, even if you think, well, the Mahabharata, Srimad Bhagavatam, all these things are just invented by people to make Krishna appear very great. He says, at least we've got this one thing here that is spoken by Krishna, Bhagavad Gita. And if you look at it, you'll see it contains such vast knowledge in such a concise form. So many subjects are so thoroughly dealt with in Bhagavad Gita, so deeply. So this itself, that there is such a wonderful book as Bhagavad Gita, this itself is proof that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because no one else could put together such a book. So this is another reason to study, you know, Bhagavad Gita. It's proof that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And another reason is that it contains all knowledge, material, spiritual, social, political, scientific, philosophical. So these are more reasons to study Bhagavad Gita very carefully from many angles of vision. Of course, these things are expressed very, you know, concisely in Bhagavad Gita, the essence of all material, spiritual, social, political, scientific, and philosophical knowledge. The essential points are there, and of course, it can be expanded in many ways, which is our duty as preachers, is to expand this knowledge. But the essence of it is there, already there, in Bhagavad Gita. You know, the essential pieces of that knowledge are there. And so therefore, it's very helpful to study Bhagavad Gita very intensely, very carefully. Now, this is from a Bhagavad Gita lecture given on December 8, 1972 in Ahmedabad, India. So Srila Prabhupada is saying here, we are spirit souls. We don't require to accept this material body, but we have accepted it somehow or other. Dehino smenyata dehe kamram yovanam jara tata dehantaram prapti. In this way, we are wandering throughout the whole universe. But if we want to stop it, if we want to become again originally situated in our constitutional position, then we must understand Bhagavad Gita as it is. We must try to understand Krishna as he is. Then our life will be successful. Tyaktva deham punar janma naiti mameti kaunteya. Go back home, go back to Godhead. This is very simple philosophy, and everything is explained in Bhagavad Gita. If we are fortunate enough, we should study Bhagavad Gita as it is. Then we become successful in the mission of life. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So what is the essential reason for studying Bhagavad Gita that's given in this quotation here, this number four? Can anybody say? Yes. Yeah, stop the cycle of birth and death and become situated in our original position. So just by studying this book, Bhagavad Gita, and of course this means not just intellectually studying, but also following the instructions that Krishna gives. If we do that, then we can get out of the cycle of birth and death and be situated in our original spiritual position. So five. Everything is there in the Bhagavad Gita, therefore I request you to study Bhagavad Gita thoroughly as it is. Then you become perfectly powerful, spiritual. Now chant Hare Krishna. So this is another reason to study Bhagavad Gita, because if we study it, then we'll be empowered. Each of us has within us some spiritual potency, some spiritual power. And by studying Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada is saying, you'll become perfectly powerful, spiritual. So our original spiritual potencies will become awakened by studying Bhagavad Gita. Then, six. Everything is there. Social, political, economical, all solutions are there in Bhagavad Gita, but unfortunately, it is our property. It was spoken in India, and it was desired that all Indians should learn it and spread the knowledge all over the world. But the rascals are doing nothing. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ordered, Bharata Bhumiti Manushya Janma Hoila Yar. It is for the perfect human being. Janma Sartaka Kari Kar Paro Bakar. The other parts of the world, they're in darkness. So there is great necessity of spreading the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita all over the world. The customers are also ready. So if you want glory of India, if you want to glorify your life, just study Bhagavad Gita as it is and spread it all over the world. You'll be honored. Single-handed, whatever I have done, they are thinking wonderful. And if we've got many, many persons to go outside India and preach this gospel of Bhagavad Gita, they will be benefited and you will be glorified. Your country will be glorified. This message of Bhagavad Gita, it is a fact, not a story. So one thing we'll find in these quotations, if we go over them, we'll see that certain of them are directed to certain types of people. So this particular quotation, it's specifically directed towards those who are born in India. You know, Srila Prabhupada is saying that people born in India have special, people of the Indian heritage have a special duty to study very thoroughly this Bhagavad Gita and try to introduce it to people all over the world. He says, now the benefit is here, you'll see he says, India will become glorified. He says, the individual and the country, India, they will become glorified if people in India do this. And that's also a very good benefit because India is the homeland of this Vedic culture at this time. And now India does not have such a great reputation in the world. It is considered to be a poverty-stricken country. But Srila Prabhupada said it should be known all over the world, not for begging for help, but for giving this spiritual knowledge. So number seven. So this is from Bhagavad Gita lecture May 22, 1974, in Bombay. So because they do not read Bhagavad Gita, they do not know how to maintain the whole society. Therefore, there is now chaos. Therefore, it is needed, Imam Rajarshiya Vidu, the Raja, the kings, the government, they must study Bhagavad Gita. Then it will be nice. So here, Srila Prabhupada is saying, study of Bhagavad Gita, it's necessary to properly organize society. So if he's saying, if the government leaders, see, you can see these different categories of people. You know, sometimes he's talking to his disciples, sometimes he's talking to people in India, now he's talking to the government leaders. Saying if the government leaders understand Bhagavad Gita, then society will be run very nicely. Actually, after number 7, there's a paragraph. It's just some extra sentences that were stuck in there. You can cross them out. And then 8. If we are engaged in drinking wine and playing cards with some prostitute, that is very advanced. That is very advanced society. He's peacefully drinking and playing cards with prostitute. He's advanced. And because he's chanting Hare Krishna, he's creating nuisance. This is the government. Therefore, the teaching of Bhagavad Gita should be taken by the persons who are going to be elected in the government service. The public should be aware of this. If somebody comes to canvass for votes, you should first inquire whether you have read Bhagavad Gita. Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, showed Bhagavad Gita. Why should you not? Do you know what is Bhagavad Gita? Then I shall give you vote. Otherwise, get out. Rajarshiya Vidu. This is required. Now, if you want to be saved from the crisis that is coming very gradually, crisis means there will be. Now, in black market, you can get things. You can get eatables, rice, wheat. But if you don't take to Bhagavad Gita, there will be no more, even if you pay black price. That time is coming. There will be no more available. There will be no milk. There will be no more sugar. There will be no more rice. There will be no more wheat, no more fruits. Then you have to eat meat. Oh, the beef shop. Then that will go on. And the human shop also. the human shop also. Gradually come. You have to eat the human being also. Carnivores. So it is therefore a great necessity that Rajarshiya Vidu, Raja, those who are government men, they must study Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, don't give them vote. So this is from Bhagavad Gita Lecture, March 22, 1974, Bombay. So this is another reason to study Bhagavad Gita, because if we don't study Bhagavad Gita and convince people, especially the government people, to take this up, then this crisis is going to come. And sometimes devotees, they're wondering, is there going to be a big earthquake or something? Yeah, but Srila Prabhupada is saying, yes, the crisis is going to come. It's unavoidable unless the government leaders take this up. So this is another reason to avoid, you know, the coming crisis of Kali Yuga. So you can just imagine going out and seeing human beings, human flesh being sold in the shops. But Srila Prabhupada, he's Tri Kaligya, and he's seeing that this is inevitable unless we study Bhagavad Gita very carefully and convince others, especially the leaders of society, to take it up. So 9, we should study Bhagavad Gita very nicely. So this is just another reason to study Bhagavad Gita, is that actually Srila Prabhupada said to do it. You know, that's just a very simple reason. Srila Prabhupada said do it. He said repeatedly do it. You know, so we should... So he said, so you can see we're gradually building up quite a list here of some very of many reasons why Bhagavad Gita should be studied. And if we keep these in mind, maybe that will encourage us a little bit during this class, and also afterwards, to sort of continue our deep study of Bhagavad Gita. We should know it very thoroughly, and be exercising our brains, how to introduce this to others, whether we're doing it by book distribution or some other way, writing or speaking, or just talking with people that we meet, whatever. We should have this very thoroughly in mind. So number 10, Bhagavad Gita lecture, April 2, 1974, Bombay. They are simply interested with the bodily comforts of life. That's all. Never mind what is our next life, what kind of life we are going to, but this is a fact. Therefore, we have to study Bhagavad Gita very, very seriously. So somebody can tell me, what point is Srila Prabhupada making here? Yes. Yeah. Right. And also he's saying we're going to get another body. So if we study Bhagavad Gita, it will help us get out of this cycle of birth and death and get the best kind of body. So the next, 11. How can we guide the people? How we can become teacher? How we can become leader? Anda yatandai rupaniyama nas. Yasyatma buddhi kunipe. Anda. I am anda, blind, and I try to lead others, andas. Therefore, there must be chaos. This will not help us. We must see through the eyes of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We must study Bhagavad Gita perfectly well. So this means if we're going to be proper leaders, we should know Bhagavad Gita. We should know where we're going to take people. Because if we're brahmanas, say most of us have second initiation or aspiring for it. So that means we're leaders. We're supposed to be the leaders of the entire society. So we should know, we shouldn't be blind leaders. We should know where to take people. So studying Bhagavad Gita is necessary for leaders. Any kind of leader in society. This is a point that comes up in this next quote, 12 too. There are so many guides, but they do not know what is the aim of life. Therefore, Shastra says that if you do not know what is the aim of life, you should not become a guru, you should not become a father, you should not become a mother. Janani nasasyat. So what is the aim of life? The aim of life. Namochayat ya samupetyam rityum. Samupetyam rityum. We have got this disease, mrityu, or death. And we have to die. We are making so many plans for our happiness, but where is the plan for stopping death? That is the ultimate goal of life, but they do not know. Namochayat ya samupetyam rityum. Krishna says, everything is explained in the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, we are repeatedly asking everyone to study Bhagavad Gita as it is. So this combines some of the points that we've already made. In other words, it's studying Bhagavad Gita is necessary for leaders, even if you're going to be a mother or a father, what to speak of a spiritual master. One should know this science so you can help. And the reason is, by studying Bhagavad Gita, we can help people solve their real problem, which is getting free from the cycle of birth and death. So that's from Bhagavad Gita Lecture, April 6, 1974, Bombay. So number 13, Buddha Bhava Samanvitaha, with ecstasy of love, this is wanted, this is perfection of life. If we take to Krishna consciousness with love and faith, full understanding of Krishna, that is the perfection of life. That you can get Every one of us, if we study Bhagavad Gita very carefully, without any malinterpretation, Bhagavad Gita lecture, April 20, 1974, Hyderabad, India. So what benefit is Srila Prabhupada describing here? What benefit can we get from studying Bhagavad Gita? Yeah, we can actually get the ecstasy of love for Krishna by studying Bhagavad Gita. So I don't think we've got that one here yet. So we can add that to our list. So we can get the ecstasy of love for Krishna by studying Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, we can get full understanding of Krishna. We can get the ecstasy of love of Krishna by studying Bhagavad Gita. 14. So if we study Bhagavad Gita, if we understand what is the nature of Bhagavan, then our life is successful. You try to understand from the statement of Krishna with your logic, argument, science, and everything. You will find complete answer. So this Krishna consciousness movement is not a concoction of mind. It is scientific. It is based on the Vedic knowledge. It is primarily on the background of the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. So this this is a reason to study Bhagavad Gita, is that we're trying to spread Krishna consciousness, and the primary source of information about Krishna consciousness is Bhagavad Gita. So that's another reason that Bhagavad Gita is the primary teaching of the Krishna consciousness movement. And that's from Bhagavad Gita lecture, April 27, 1974 in Tirupati, India. So 15. In this way, from Bhagavad Gita, if we study Bhagavad Gita nicely, then we can understand what is God. Otherwise, you can go on speculating for millions of years, for many, many births. You cannot understand what is God. There are so many societies, theological societies, this theosophical societies, but what do they know about God? They do not know, neither can know. It is not possible because they are thinking with their imperfect senses. How you can have the idea of the perfect, of the unlimited, by your imperfect speculation? So this is, I think, a new benefit, I think, that we don't really have yet. Oh, let's see. Oh, okay. Well, that's if we know who God is already. I think this is a more general thing, that we can understand what is God. It's a slight difference, like we can say, well, we can understand Krishna, by studying Bhagavad Gita. Of course, we're devotees. But then Srila Prabhupada is saying here, there are so many societies and individuals who are trying to understand, not Krishna particularly, but what is God. So for them, we can, if we study Bhagavad Gita very carefully, then we can give them information. Who is God? What is God? Number 16. Therefore, if we study Bhagavad Gita very carefully, you understand everything. Bhagavad Gita lecture, September 20, 1972, Los Angeles. So we've already got that Bhagavad Gita is a source of knowledge about every subject. Now this next one we haven't touched on yet, and it's very important. This is from a Chaitanya Charitamrita lecture, March 30th, 1975, Mayapur. Without understanding Krishna, if we try to understand Krishna's pastimes with Radharani, that is foolishness. But they do not know Krishna. How can they understand his pastimes with the gopis? That is foolishness. Therefore, we have to understand Krishna first of all, and Krishna himself explaining himself in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna does not speak anything about his pastimes with Radharani. That is strictly prohibited. You never find Krishna speaking about his pastimes with the gopis or with Radharani. No, he's officially speaking about himself. I am this, I am that. Mataparataram nanyat kinchidasti dananjaya. Mameva ye prapadyante mayametam tarantite. First of all, try to understand Krishna. Thoroughly study Bhagavad Gita. And after studying Bhagavad Gita, if you are fortunate enough to understand what is Krishna, then Krishna says, surrender. That is the beginning of understanding Krishna. Don't try to understand the pastimes of Krishna with the gopis. Just like if you make a friend, ordinarily if you become intimate friend, then you can understand about his household affairs. If you are newly a gentleman introduced with another gentleman, you cannot ask him, what is the affair in your household or with your wife or with your beloved? That you cannot ask, neither it is possible to understand. So the foolishness is going on that without understanding Krishna, there are so-called rascal foolish poets. They are describing Krishna's pastimes with Radharani. That is the cause of fall down of the so-called Vaishnavism. So what is the benefit of studying Bhagavad Gita that Srila Prabhupada is saying here? Yeah, so because if we don't properly understand who Krishna is, which we learn from Bhagavad Gita, then it's impossible to understand anything higher. So you can say it's necessary to go on to higher understandings. And you know, this is a very real problem. Srila Prabhupada says here, this is the cause of the fall down of so-called, you know, Vaishnavism, that without understanding Krishna properly, you know, they want to go to Krishna's pastimes with Radharani and the gopis. Now this is a related point in the next one. If you want to learn how to love God or Krishna, then study Srimad Bhagavatam. And to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, the preliminary study is Bhagavad Gita. So study Bhagavad Gita to understand the real nature or identification of God and yourself and your relationship. And then when you are a little conversant, when you are prepared that yes, Krishna is the only lovable object, then next book you take Srimad Bhagavatam and you go on. Just like Bhagavad Gita as it is entrance. Just like students, they pass their school examination, then enter into the college. So you pass your school examination, how to love God, by studying Bhagavad Gita as it is. Then study Srimad Bhagavatam, and that is the graduate study. And when you are still further advanced, postgraduate, then study teachings of Lord Chaitanya. So there is no difficulty. The fact is that we have to learn how to love Krishna. So direction is there and method is there, and we are trying to serve you as far as possible. It's a general lecture, September 30th, 1968. So this is another reason to study Bhagavad Gita that we haven't touched on before. It's the preliminary study to Srimad Bhagavatam. You need to master Bhagavad Gita before going on to Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's interesting to see what Srila Prabhupada says is the main point there. He says, when you are prepared that yes, Krishna is the only lovable object. So this is another reason to study Bhagavad Gita, because from Bhagavad Gita we can understand that Krishna is the only lovable object. Uh, This is always a big problem for everyone. Everyone has a tendency to love something or someone. So who to love, how to love them. This is something we can learn from Bhagavad Gita. So the next, number 19, actually every one of us, we want a permanent body, a permanent situation, a permanent life, a blissful life, a life of knowledge. That is our hankering, but we do not know. Do not know because we do not care to know. Otherwise, everything is explained. You haven't got to study many books. You just simply study Bhagavad Gita as it is. We have therefore published this Bhagavad Gita as it is without any nonsensical interpretation. Then you'll get all knowledge and you'll know what you are meant for. So this is, I think we've covered these points before. It's slightly different. It's just like a slightly different way of looking at it. It says by studying Bhagavad Gita, we'll know what our purpose in life is. We'll know what we're meant for. In the next quote, this is one. It's actually related to one of the ones that we did before. It's mainly directed towards the people of India, saying again that it's their duty to study Bhagavad Gita, make their life perfect, and then spread this knowledge to others. Of course, it's interesting what Srila Prabhupada says in the last part here. It says, and you can see, simply by chanting this Hare Krishna mantra and studying Bhagavad Gita as it is, how these boys and girls, they are in ecstasy. They are in the spiritual platform. So, Srila Prabhupada saying there that simply by studying Bhagavad Gita and chanting Hare Krishna, one can come to this platform of spiritual ecstasy. Is number 21. Again, that's just making some of the same points that we've made before in a slightly different way. Okay, this next one, just interesting for the emphasis that Srila Prabhupada gives. It's quote 22. They want to make the spiritual world as zero or impersonal due to less intelligence. But actually, real life, real pleasure, eternal pleasure is there in the spiritual world, not in this material world. So from Bhagavad Gita, if you study scrutinizingly each word and shloka, not by man interpretation, but actually as it is, then we can understand what is our eternal life, what is our eternal pleasure, how we can return and sport there. Everything is explained there. Everyone can go. Everyone can transfer himself in that spiritual world simply by understanding Krishna, that's all. And the Krishna understanding is there. Krishna is explaining himself in the Bhagavad Gita. Simply study Bhagavad Gita as it is. You get all information how to realize Brahman, Aham Brahmasmi. General Lecture, February 26, 1973, Jakarta. So I think it's interesting here how Srila Prabhupada is saying we should scrutinizingly study each word, each sloka. And some of the results that he gives here, he's saying we can understand what is our eternal life, what is our eternal pleasure, how we can return and sport there. So what he's saying here is we can actually enter into Krishna's pastimes by studying Bhagavad Gita. We can
learn how to transfer ourselves to the spiritual world by studying Bhagavad Gita. The next quote, 23, again, it's a request for the people of India to study the Bhagavad Gita very carefully. So, Srila Prabhupada says, so I require the cooperation of the Indians, especially young men, educated men. Come forward, stay with us, study Bhagavad Gita. Whatever is there, let us study it and practically apply it in life and spread the message all over the world. That is our mission. General Lecture, January 23rd, 1975, Bombay. So it's interesting. Srila Prabhupada said many times he would be in Bombay and he would ask rich industrialists and other people, he'd say, well, you have four sons, you know, give me, you know, one son, let me train him and preach all over the world, you know, the message of Bhagavad Gita. And he said nobody would give him a son. You know, they say, no, how will he earn his living? You know, nobody would give him a son. He tried to do that before he went to the West. Of course, Srila Prabhupada went to the West and he made so many Western disciples, but a few days ago, before I came here, I was in Bombay, and the devotees at Chaupati Temple were taking me to college programs at many colleges and universities in the Bombay area, where there are clubs that young, educated Indian men are forming. You have to study Bhagavad Gita. It's just very amazing how later Srila Prabhupada is getting his desire. You know, that many young, educated men and women in India are very seriously studying this message of Bhagavad Gita, and hopefully there'll be some good result in this country and around the world. The next quote, 24, is again a point that's been made in another quotation, that if you study Bhagavad Gita, then you learn all branches of knowledge. 25. Now this is a different one here. There's a different point made here. So Bhagavan is not far away from you. Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hridesh Arjuna. He is staying within the core of your heart. But if you qualify yourself as devotee, he'll speak with you. But if you commit offenses thinking Krishna as ordinary man, then Krishna will never give you instruction. So our request is this Krishna consciousness movement that you study Bhagavad Gita. General Lecture, December 25, 1975, San Francisco. So the point that I gather from this is that if we actually study Bhagavad Gita very carefully and properly understand it, then we'll learn how to take instruction from Krishna within the heart. So this is a new benefit, I think, that we haven't listed before. If we study Bhagavad Gita, then Prabhupada's saying, he's saying it, but if you qualify yourself as devotee, he'll speak with you. So this is another benefit. In quote 26, that's just repeating a point that's been made before, that all knowledge, political, social, religious, philosophical, cultural, it's all there in Bhagavad Gita. 27, again making a point that if we study Bhagavad Gita, we can know the philosophy of life. 28 is interesting because it said some of these quotes are specifically directed towards, you know, different categories of devotees. So this one's specifically dedicated to life members. If any of you are involved in life member work, you can use this one. Srila Prabhupada says, as you have become our life member, try to broadcast the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. That is the meaning of membership. In other words, it's not just that you give money for our construction projects. You know, the meaning of life member is, yes, they should give money to help with different projects, But Srila Prabhupada is saying, so as you become our life member, try to broadcast the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. That is the meaning of membership. Everything is there. We've got so many books, at least thoroughly study Bhagavad Gita as it is. Yes, understand the philosophy of life, apply in own life, and try to spread among friends. Now, this next one, it's a long one. You can read it on your own. But basically what it's saying is, what Srila Prabhupada is saying is that Bhagavad Gita actually describes what is spiritual master, what is a guru, what is a teacher, proper spiritual teacher. So he says if you study Bhagavad Gita, you'll know. When you study Bhagavad Gita, you'll know who is sadhu, who is mahatma, who is guru. Then why shall we make a mistake again? So he says, if you go on, he'll say, so if you are misled, if you are cheated, whose fault it is? But if you want to be cheated, who can check? Even though somebody by mistake has gone to a rascal, the book is there, and as soon as you find out, here is a rascal who does not know anything about Krishna, and I have come to him, reject him. That is stated in the Shastra. Guru apyaviliptasya karya karyam ajanato parityago vidhiyate. Even by mistake, you have come to a rascal who does not know how to become guru, you can reject him. So this is another reason for studying Bhagavad Gita very carefully. We can understand who is guru and who is not. Okay, the next quote is number 29. This again deals with the problem of what our next birth will be. And in this one, Srila Prabhupada's warning, if you don't study Bhagavad Gita very seriously, says you may become a dog in your next life. Then take life of the street and go, go, go. Mrityu Samsara Bhartmini. For this purpose, we request every one of you that you study Bhagavad Gita very seriously as it is. Apply it in your practical life and teach it to others. That is perfection. This is from an evening darshan Hrishikesh, May 9th, 1977. In the next quote, Srila Prabhupada says, so if you try to understand Bhagavad Gita as it is, then we get some benefit. Not some benefit, the ultimate benefit. What is the purpose of Bhagavad Gita? Krishna has come. Krishna is instructing Arjuna. Aiming at Arjuna, he's instructing the whole world. What is the position of the living entities? What is our constitutional position? We are all living entities and Krishna is God. What is Krishna's position? What is our position? What is this material nature? What is the time factor? What is our activities? These things are very nicely explained. Prakriti, Purusha, Jiva, time, and karma. These five things are very nicely described. Bhagavad Gita lecture, December 8, 1972. So there are a few more quotes here, and I'll end with number 35. So if we simply try to understand Bhagavad Gita as it is, we understand immediately the science of God. General Lecture, March 31, 1971, Bombay. And that's basically what this particular course is about. We're going to try to understand the science of God from Bhagavad Gita. So, as I said, you keep this list of quotations from Srila Prabhupada and especially have it on the day of the midterm examination. And now if you can take out your study guide, spend the last few minutes here. Just going over a little bit what we're going to be going over in this course. And you'll see it's called the Levels of God Realization. And you see that the first one is the non-existence of God. And then the second one is accepting demons, ghosts, and spirits as supreme. And then the third is accepting demigods as supreme. And the fourth is accepting Brahman as supreme. And the fifth is the universal form. And the sixth is seeing God in nature. And the seventh is super soul. Eighth is seeing God as the ultimate source and controller. Nine is seeing God as the Father. And finally, we have properly seeing Krishna as Bhagavan and his full feature as the personality of Godhead. And tomorrow, we're going to start with section one, the non-existence of God. And because this is what Krishna does in Bhagavad Gita, he explains everything, all these different ways of perceiving the Supreme, ranging from the non-existence of God all the way to perceiving Krishna in his two-armed form as the personality of Godhead. So in each section, what we're going to be doing, we're going to be studying this very scrutinizingly, and what we want to do is examine what are the characteristics of the particular level of realization. And we want to understand, well, what is the mentality of the person who is at this level? In other words, why are they at this particular level or particular kind of realization rather than somewhere else? That information is given there in Bhagavad Gita. And then also, we'll want to know what advantage does the person perceive? I mean, why, in other words, why do people want to be at this level? What do they think is the advantage of being at a particular level? And then we want to look at, well, what's wrong with that? What are the defects of being at a particular level of God realization that isn't the highest? And then the final thing is, well, then how do you counter that? In other words, what are the arguments against being at that level? And how do you bring a person to another level? What ways are there to do that? So, I'm hoping that this will be a sort of a joint venture in exploring the levels of God realization in Bhagavad Gita. And although there's not going to be like written homework assignments, I'm not going to give you like written homework assignments or anything like that. But I'm hoping that if you're taking this very seriously, that you'll look over the sample text and the purport to it, and you'll see I've listed other texts there. So if you kind of go over these things and start thinking about them, then it'll make for more productive discussion as we go through all of these things. So any questions? So what we've done these first 2 days is just sort of try to prepare ourselves a little bit for entering into this study of Bhagavad Gita by kind of reflecting on our own relationship with Bhagavad Gita, and also by considering what Srila Prabhupada has said about the importance of studying Bhagavad Gita, very, very carefully. So does anyone have any questions? So the purpose of this course is to go through all the different levels of God realization that are described in Bhagavad Gita by Lord Krishna. And this, the main reason for doing this is it's for a preaching purpose, because people are normally accustomed to looking at religious books and thinking, well, this is just, you have the Bible, which is the sectarian book of the Christians, and the Quran, which is the sectarian book of the Islamic people, and so on and so forth. They tend to see things like that. But what we would like to do is show that, well, Bhagavad Gita, it's not just the sectarian book of the Hindus. It's actually a universal science of God realization. And one way to do that is to show One way to convince people of that is to show that in the Gita, Krishna talks about an entire phenomenology of religion. All varieties of religious experience are explained there, all different levels of God realization. In other words, after we go through this analysis, you'll be able to, when you encounter practically any expression of religion in the world, you'll be able to find a place for it in the system that Krishna lays out in the Bhagavad Gita. And then you'll also be able to see how pure devotional service to Krishna actually fits in. It's actually the highest expression of love of God. It's not just some sectarian thing. It's actually objectively the highest form of God realization. And this is what we would expect. You know, if there really is a religious text that is universal in its implications, you would expect it to be like this. You know, you would expect it to explain all the different varieties of religion and then where its particular expression fits into that spectrum. So we find in Bhagavad Gita that Krishna explains everything, ranging from the non-existence of God up to the highest level of God realization. You know, everything is there. So we're going to start with the non-existence of God, or atheism of various kinds, which you'll find that Krishna has some things to say about that in Bhagavad Gita. Now this idea of atheism in the Vedic literature, it means, you know, different things. Of course, there is the conventional sort of atheism where, you know, you have a materialistic philosophy that holds there is no supreme conscious intelligence behind the universe, just strictly materialistic. Then you also have atheists of the Vedic kind who would be demons who will recognize God but want to kill God, not like that. Or sometimes we find in the Vedic literature it's described that those who consider the demigods, you know, to be on the same level as Krishna, they are to be considered atheists. That manifestation is there. And then also you find that sometimes impersonalism is considered a form of atheism, to say that God, there is God, but God has no hands, no arms, no legs, no eyes, nothing. You know, God is senseless and formless. That's also described by Srila Prabhupada as a kind of atheism. So there are many kinds of atheism that are explained in the Vedic literature, but I think we'll be concentrating more or less on, you know, our standard, you know, variety of, you know, atheism, which is, you know, the idea that everything can be explained materially and there is no need for any conception of God. So I thought we might start out by considering how many here at one point in their lives consider themselves to be atheists. You can raise your hands. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Anybody else? Your hand is half raised, half down. So there are five of us here who at one point or another consider themselves to be atheists. So I thought we just might talk a little bit about that, you know, before we get into the Bhagavad Gita. I could say myself, I was raised in a Christian family, a Catholic family, and then when I went to the university, at some point I became frustrated, you know, with the whole thing. You know, I particularly didn't like the idea that God gave us a tendency for sense gratification and not very much opportunity to fulfill it. You know, I thought that was very that sort of made me angry, not wanting to, you know, accept God, you know, at a certain point. So, and then, you know, it's sort of a fashionable intellectual
mark of, you know, being a, you know, being a very, you know, strong individual, not to, you know, believe in God. You know, that tendency is there in some universities. That mentality is advertised and cultivated. So I was also influenced by that, you know, by the climate, you know, by the intellectual climate with which I was surrounded. And then also, even later on, when I first became involved with Krishna consciousness, I was explaining how the other day how I got my copy of Bhagavad Gita, and then I mailed off for Bhagavatams and other things. Even then, when I encountered reverses in my life, then I would think, gosh, you know, I'm trying to surrender to Krishna, and this happened to me, and that happened to me, and why is that, you know, if there's God? And then I remember one time I just threw out everything, all the books that I'd gotten and everything. I just got rid of them all because I think, you know, I've tried this. I was an atheist and I became attracted to this philosophy, and now I'm still not happy. And I threw everything out, all my posters, all my tapes, all my books. Of course, you see, I'm back. So would anyone else like to say anything about their flirtations with atheism? Anybody else like to say anything? Yes. Dr. Chris.
I was also brought up in a Catholic background. My mother was Catholic, and so I had to go to church with her all the time, and then I got into some various activities like that as growing up as a kid, and then I decided that that there was no God, and that I'm just going, and there was no reactions for anything. And then I started to get into this other philosophy a lot, which described an existence of a type of God. Like, you know, I thought that there was a God, and that it was a spirit, and, you know, that it was a life force going through everything. So,
mm-hmm. So anyone else want to talk about their history of atheism? Oh yes, there's many of us.
Like their ritualistic, you know, ways of doing things. It became very boring, actually. I was very tired. So I stopped going to church, and my parents became very upset. I told them, I can't go to church. I prefer to go to the Hare Krishna instead, because I accepted, you know, Krishna consciousness is better philosophy. But I rejected, you know, the Christian way of doing things. But I figured, you know, I should. There is God, but they're not presenting it very nicely.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't attracted to the way they presented it. I began to search. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I think we'll you know, that mentality, I think we'll get into in one of these other levels of like God realization, which is, you know, just seeing God as a father, you know, or something, you know, that you just worship with some rules and regulations and like that. I think we'll encounter that manifestation as we kind of go on. But how about anyone else with their personal experience of atheism? Vedavyas, you were an atheist at one time.
I got a little, I never considered myself atheist, except I got sidetracked by some Raelians.
Uh-huh.
The Raelians are some people, this guy from France, he says from the Bible the word Elohim means that they are descended from the heavens, and it's in plural, so he spoke about some extraterrestrial people that came on the earth.
Yes, that might be the next section, the demons, ghosts, and spirits.
No, it wasn't really ghosts and spirits. He was speaking very tangible for other things, according to their statement, that God actually is not God. There is no God in control. All this, we've been put into this planet by the, how do you call that, genes? Or
DNA.
By DNA, and then if I met Jesus Christ and all that stuff, and then he was preaching to us that...
That's a variety of atheism, that everything's, that some creatures just evolved on some other planet, and we were evolving on this planet by a material process, and because they were more intelligent and ahead of us, they came... They had more advanced material science, so they came and they intervened in the intervention, in our development, and turned the ape men into human beings by genetic. Yeah, so that idea is, it's simply another variety of atheistic, materialistic, philosophy. So, Lochan, you were going to say something about your...
Born in a big family. They have six brothers and two sisters. So we have now five brothers and two sisters. So this time in Portugal was very common.
Also Catholic.
Yeah.
Catholic. Oh, yes. So many Catholic atheists here.
And then it was common, in the big family to have a priest. Somebody should be a priest.
Uh-huh.
Actually, my mother, once they had become a priest, and at 10 years old, she could be in a seminary with a priest. So I was there for 2 years and a half. But actually 2 years and a half, then I became very tired to be there. Because I saw what this priest here is doing, what every common person does the same. Then I made some kind, when my friend, he became also fed up with the college, the life in the college, so he made some arrangements which he could be expulsed from the college. So in one time, was every afternoon we had time which we had to study. We had compulsory to study for 2 hours.
Uh-huh.
So we just put a cigarette, I started smoking that time, 12 years old. So the priest became so angry with him that the next day he expulsed him from the college. So the next, I thought, this is a good system to be exposed of the college, so I tried to figure out how I could also be expulsed from the college. So somehow or other, I didn't need any crazy scene, but somehow they told my parents, this is not funny, and it just take me out from it. And they took me, so in that time, I developed a strong desire to be the joy number one. And in the next years, very young, I started to develop a very independent attitude with my parents, and really, the next few years I tried to be the number one enjoyer. So at least I forget completely who is God, I don't care about God if I exist or not, I just want to be the enjoyer number one.
Mm. But you didn't become like a preacher of atheism or anything like that, right? In other words, you didn't study the atheistic philosophy and give arguments, try to break the faith of...
No, I didn't.
Just became kind of a non-believer in God like that. Yes. So somebody else? Keshava Priya. I think you must have tried to break the faith of the believers.
Yeah, well, I was born in a Catholic family as well, but somehow or other, I had pretty much the same experience as you in college, studying philosophy. I remember once in our religious classes, we got lessons from a priest, and he started to explain theories from Freud and Feuerbach and Marx and stuff like that, and they had pretty good arguments against God and the whole thing. So for me, it was more like a theory, There might be God might be existing or it might not. It was just a question of different philosophers putting different theories, and the best thesis would win. And for me, Krishna consciousness was just another one of those, theories, and it still is, well, Buddha. against atheism, it was a pretty good match for the first time.
Oh, good. So, anyone else want to comment on K. Ramachandran?
I was born in a theist family, not an atheist family.
Born in a theist family.
Okay. My problem was in my life that meet me every time to atheist. Time to time, just as we work to national work or social work like that. And every time I did work long term work, I did 14 years constantly to national work. But every time I find that there's a problem between us, higher authority, but they press to do this, do this, and I somehow, I have to do this without knowing. So every time then a good question, and they were not able to answer properly. And that's why I was searching every time, and I read in the word yesterday.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, so you become raised in a theist family and then become involved in social, political, national work,
yes,
where many of the people are atheistic.
Yes.
But yeah, so that often happens. Okay, and then I suppose all of us in our preaching life have encountered atheists of various kinds. So I think that's, you know, so we know they're out there. Maybe at some point in our lives we were even among their number. Oh, let's see. I just noticed
two more things I want to put up here. Four, 10, 7, 27.
Okay. So if you can add those to your list too. Now, what we want to explore here is what Krishna and Srila Prabhupada say in Bhagavad Gita as it is about, you know, this concept of atheism, and sort of try to explore the psychology of it. Just like, now some of these things I put here, this is my analysis, so it's not exactly like Shastra that you have to accept, you know, my, you know, analysis as the absolute truth. But I think it's there may be other reasons we could put here. Just like Lochan was saying, like yeah, he wanted to be the enjoyer number one. So this is one of the reasons why people become atheists, because they want this freedom of enjoyment, because usually religion involves some kind of acceptance of some higher authority. Then you have some restriction on your sense gratification, almost always in some religious system. So we want to see what is the psychology that attracts, you know, people to, you know, these atheistic views. We also want to analyze, well, what are the defects? I mean, what's wrong with this? And we can see, I've put down some conclusions here. You're going to be miserable in this life. You're never going to be satisfied that way. And there's another downside is that you're going to get sent to the lower species of life or the hellish planet. So it's not, so there's a downside to this philosophy. And then we also want to examine, well, how it can be dealt with, you know, how you can deal with it. And, well, as Keshava Priya was pointing out, you know, she found something in the logical structure of Krishna consciousness that was attractive, at least made it a contending worldview, something that could be seriously considered. And then we also just have the mercy of Krishna and his devotees, who are just, you know, they'll give somebody prasadam or something, you know, even if they're, all right, you know, you're talking to somebody, they're spouting some atheistic philosophy, then you just say, well, here, you know, have a sweet ball or something. and then you know, that may help them advance. So, so we want to consider all these things. So we'll start our exploration of what information there is about atheism and materialism by going to, let's look at text 26 in chapter 2. And this is one place where Krishna is talking about an atheistic concept. So we should be bringing our Bhagavad Gitas each day. You know, this is going to be our text. So does everybody have that? Chapter 2, text 26. So Krishna says there, he's talking to Arjuna. He's saying, if, however, you think that the soul, or the symptoms of life, is always born and dies forever, you still have no reason to lament, O mighty armed. And in his purport, Srila Prabhupada explains, there's always a class of philosophers, almost kin to the Buddhist, who do not believe in the separate existence of the soul beyond the body. When Lord Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita, it appears that such philosophers existed, and they were known as the Lokayatikas and Vaibhasikas. Such philosophers maintain that life symptoms take place at a certain mature condition of material combination. The modern material scientist and materialist philosophers also think similarly. According to them, the body is a combination of physical elements, and at a certain stage, the life symptoms develop by interaction of the physical and chemical elements. The science of anthropology is based on this philosophy. Currently, many pseudo-religions, now becoming fashionable in America, are also adhering to this philosophy, as well as to the nihilistic, non-devotional Buddhist sects. Even if Arjuna did not believe in the existence of the soul, as in the Vaibhashika philosophy, there would still have been no cause for lamentation. No one laments the loss of a certain bulk of chemicals and stops discharging his prescribed duty. On the other hand, in modern science and scientific warfare, so many tons of chemicals are wasted for achieving victory over the enemy. According to the Vaibhashika philosophy, the so-called soul, or Atma, vanishes along with deterioration of the body. So, in any case, whether Arjuna accepted the Vedic conclusion that there is an atomic soul, or he did not believe in the existence of the soul, he had no reason to lament. According to this theory, since there are so many living entities generating out of matter every moment, and so many of them are being vanquished at every moment, there is no need to grieve for such incidents. If there were no rebirth for the soul, Arjuna had no reason to be afraid of being affected by sinful reactions due to his killing his grandfather and teacher. There Krishna is presenting a variety of an atheistic philosophy that's very common today. This is the standard idea of how life has come about. You know, there's, say if you go to the schools in the United States, you'll see that in many other countries, but at least I know in the United States, this is the only view that can be taught in the public schools. If you try to teach that God had anything to do with the creation of the human beings, other than say, you could say God created the human beings by this process of chemical evolution, and consciousness comes about like that. But if you try to say, oh yes, there's an eternal soul, God, there's that's the explanation of life, then you'll find yourself confronted with the power of the state. It's actually illegal to do that. Sometimes the Christians try to bring in some concept of God, but then they're usually defeated in the court system. So, of course, there are different arguments that can be presented against this philosophy. And this, of course, this isn't the purpose of this course, is to go into all the arguments against atheism. Yeah, there are, but you know, if we go through Srila Prabhupada's books, we'll see he gives many arguments. And the main one is, nobody has ever seen someone produce the symptoms of life simply from chemicals. Rather, what we observe is that life always comes from life. It's a very simple argument, but it's you can't really get around it. If you know, the scientists say that, well, the life symptoms of consciousness and so on and so forth are simply the product of combinations of matter, they have not been able to bring matter into such a combination that it produces that. Rather, what we see is that one living thing always comes from another, and that that there's some definite change at the time of death. You know, the matter is no longer behaving in the same way. But as I said, this isn't the place to go into extensive, you know, arguments against these different ideas. I think we're familiar with what most of them are. But I think it is important to note that this is one place where, you know, Krishna is explicitly talking. He's making reference to this idea. And, you know, we find it present today. Now, going on, we find that there are other places where Krishna makes some explicit reference to atheistic ideas. We're not going to be able to go through